welcome to Tremendous Tales with me, Liz Pichon. I write and draw all the Tom Gates books and other books like Shoe Wars. In this podcast, I'll be chatting to my wonderful guest about what snack keeps them going, especially when they're very super busy drawing. We'll hear a tremendous tale and a tremendous fail, because we all make mistakes. And I'll be asking my guests to pass on some top tips on drawing. I know they're going to have lots of those. There'll be loads of tremendous book recommendations too. And my super talented guest today is the wonderful award-winning illustrator and author Adam Stower. Adam says that he's been drawing pictures and making up stories for as long as he can remember. Adam was born in England, but grew up in Switzerland and Germany. Adam trained at the Norwich School of Art, earning a first-class honours degree in illustration. Wow. Oh, that's very impressive. He continued his studies at Brighton University and achieved a master's degree in narrative illustration and editorial design.
Ooh la la.
Adam fell in love with the city and lives there still with his wife and daughter and a cat called Murray. I've seen Adam's cat and I think Murray deserves to have a picture book all of his own. Adam thinks that telling stories with words and pictures is the best thing ever, and I agree. He's been an illustrator for 30-ish years and began writing his own stories in 2004. His books have won lots of praise and awards, and he was shortlisted for the Dundee Picture Book Award for Silly Doggy. He won the Sheffield Book Award for Troll and the Oliver, the Fantastic Book Award in 2019 for King Coo, Alligator's Mouth Award in 2020 for King Coo and The Curse of the Mummy's Gold. Adam has illustrated 19 picture books, 8 of which he wrote himself. And most recently, he has been working with an exciting collaboration with the best-selling children's phenomenon that is David Walliams. So far, he's illustrated 3 picture books, Little Monsters, Marmalade and Grannysaurus, a collection of short stories, The World's Worst Pets, and Walliams' most recent novel, Space Boy. Wow. Adam loves to draw and spends his time off filling sketchbooks with drawings from his imagination and drawing from life when he's out and about. He loves to share his passion for drawing with others, young and old alike, from taking part in the children's literary festivals as far afield as Cape Town, South Africa, to teaching adults to sketch in the Caribbean. That was a good gig.
Nice one.
Adam loves to inspire and be inspired by drawing with others. Adam is currently working on a new series of illustrated young fiction books that he's very excited about, but it's all a bit hush-hush, which makes me want to ask him about it even more. A huge welcome to Adam. Hi, Adam. How are you doing? How does it make you feel when you hear about all the things you've been up to? Exhausted, I'd say.
Yeah, I feel like having a bit of a nap, actually, after all that. But thank you so much for such a lovely introduction and for inviting me to be on your podcast.
Oh, my goodness, it's an absolute pleasure. I mean, there's so many things that I want to talk to you about. And one of them, obviously, is how is Murray? Murray the cat?
Murray's in the other room. And actually, my wife Zoe was going to go out for a walk, but she decided she'd better stay here. Because Murray, around about tea time, has a habit of meowing very loudly and bothering me, and often reaching up and actually tapping me on the shoulder when I'm at my desk for some food. And we thought that's not very podcast friendly. So so Murray's in the other room asleep, but he could have had a starring role.
I think
he can be quite annoying.
You might have to go and get him. We might have to see what Murray, because Murray is quite handsome, isn't he? He's a little character. I promise you, we're going to talk about your work, but I just wanted to get Murray over and done with.
Oh, no. Murray's at the forefront of most things. Actually, he's a great inspiration, especially during lockdown. And I must say, actually, one thing that's really funny about Murray is that during lockdown, because we were around all the time, he really developed his vocabulary and he had all these different sounds he started to make. And I was really, really, because they always sound roughly like meow, as you'd expect.
Yes.
But there was one, I was just sure he was on the brink of actually uttering his first word. And I knew that it's if like that muffin, word, yeah. Do you know what it would be? It would be now.
Now.
Because he's very demanding. So do you want your dinner? Now. Do you want to go out? Now. Do you want a tummy rub? Now. Yeah. So anyway, that was my theory.
So you're not as old as me, but I remember watching a TV program where they had a dog that used to be able to say sausages.
It was on That's Life. Yeah. On That's Life, yeah. Sausages.
So even if he isn't saying now, it could sound like it anyway. I could imagine that. I'd like to see it right now. I'd like to see his little furry Murray paw tapping you on the shoulder and just saying, now?
Yeah, it happens all the time because I have my headphones on. And so he's obviously been shouting at me. And then when I don't, he reaches up. And it's just so funny that it taps me on the shoulder.
It's nice to hear that he's an inspiration as well. So we'll move on from Murray, as gorgeous and as lovely how he is. And even reading your biog, there were so many things that I didn't know about you. And I'm just wondering, I know you've been working on a very tight deadline. So firstly, have you recovered and are you okay now?
Well, yes, I have mostly recovered. But often when you're working on a book, you do all the work and you send it off and then people check through it and make sure it's all right. And if there's any little things that they want to change or add in, and that can often happen. So you can work really hard and then you sort of hand it all over and you think, great. And you're sort of like, you know, brushing your hands off thinking, great, I'm going to go and have a sleep and a rest. And then they'll come back and say, oh, there's just a couple more bits we just need you to correct. So I'm just doing that at the moment on my latest book. But it's all but done. It's very exciting. And it's such a lovely moment when you're working on a long project like that. You can hand it over. You know, it's like any big piece of work, isn't it?
It's that moment of relief and then slight moment of panic that you realise it's gone and there's nothing you can do about it.
That's so true. That is so true.
You're like, yes, it's gone. And then you think, oh, I hope it's okay. Actually, I wanted to ask you about when you were younger. So I don't think I've asked you about growing up in Switzerland and Germany. Do you think that really has influenced you now in the kind of work that you do?
Do you know, I think in a way it might have done, because I was born in England and then, but when my family moved out to Switzerland when I was two, my dad just got a job out there and we lived just outside Zurich, which was a beautiful part of the world. And we lived right by the lake. We used to go swimming in the lake and get ferries across the lake and things like that. So it was this very idyllic, imagine me in a skirt in Sound of Music.
Well, that was my next question. I was going to say, like, what kind of a kid were you?
Yeah, well, I didn't wear skirts, unfortunately, but I did enjoy swimming, but it was great. It was a very idyllic childhood growing up there. So I was there until I was about 11 and then moved to Germany for 4 years. I think one of the things that definitely had an influence on me was that there wasn't a lot of English bookshops and things like that. And but my dad traveled a lot for his work. And whenever he came back through the airport, he would buy the latest copy of either Asterix or Tintin.
I loved Asterix.
And they were like gold dust. And of course, my older brother, Matt, he'd had to be the first one to read them. And so I always got them sort of secondhand. But yeah, that was wonderful. And I still love those things. And I think those books, and they had Lucky Luke and things like that out on the continent back then. I think the design and the style and the characterization of all those amazing characters, I think they're still present in my work now, actually. Mm. There's something about them, I think, that really sank in. Yeah,
I loved it. Did you always love drawing, and did you copy the drawings from those books and keep sketchbooks or read comics or do anything like that as well?
Absolutely. Yeah, all of the above. I mean, I had an aunt who was American, and her best friend and her best friend's husband were called Bill and Sue Croyer, and they had an animation company in California called Croyer Films.
Wow.
And they came to visit once, and I was just so in awe of them. And I remember we were sat at the kitchen table and Bill Croyer was sitting there drawing perfect Mickey Mouses. And Sue Croyer, his wife, used to work for Walt Disney as a colorist. And she said, actually, it was like a factory because she had to just paint the same jacket, the same color blue, like hundreds and hundreds of times. So she said it wasn't as exciting as you might expect. But I loved anything like that. So I had these wonderful books, which I think I've got here, still on my shelf.
That process of illustration, like doing something like animation, like for a kid, knowing somebody who actually does it, making it real, like, you know, you would never normally come into contact with somebody that actually did anything with Disney. So suddenly seeing it being in front of you and seeing somebody drawing it must have been like, you know, really exciting, even though she's saying it's boring because they used to do it all by hand.
I've always loved animation. I still do. And so it was particularly exciting talking to them. But I used to make those flick books, you know, you get those little books of raffle tickets or something, you know, things like that. And they're really good for making flick books from because they're really cheap and they're really small and sort of pocket sized. And I used to make, you know, little animated flick books and things like that. And it was great fun. You know, it's always a good place to start if you're learning drawing, is to copy things out that you like. And it kind of helps inform you as to how it's done because it breaks it down into simple stages. And then you kind of learn, you know, the building blocks to follow.
That's it. It's like just because you're copying something, what you're doing is you're learning how somebody else draws in a different style. You were pointing out a sketchbook. You said you were going to show us something.
These are the very same books. I'll hold them very still in front of the camera. For
those wow, ones. Look at that.
And these are really old. And I got these I've had these from when I was really tiny.
Wow. Oh, they look amazing. Comics, my friend. You've got all of them, animated cartoons.
And they're brilliant. And so I used to copy these out a lot, but it would break everything down into into how to draw characters on that.
So would that be something you would kind of recommend? I mean, we're hopping over to a top tip, but we can add in the tips anytime. But that'd be something that you could recommend for children to do now, is like copying other characters, tracing them, drawing
Absolutely. Them. Absolutely, yeah. Because, I mean, if there's lots of books like these out now. I'm sure you could find them.
Yeah, but I've got one. See, yeah,
there's things like these sort of pages, and I'd kind of copy these off to see all the different characterizations and stuff. And I think, I mean, in my work now, I love doing crazy characters in all of my work and trying to get as much personality. And I always think of making illustrations, especially for illustrating a picture book. It's like you're like a film director, really. You're sort of like gathering your film producer, really. So, you know, the stage set is like the scenery that you draw. And then you kind of, you're the casting agent because you kind of create all these little characters that are going to take the roles in the story. And each of those characters has to be able to do things that the story demands. So if you wanted to, say, have a character with a skipping rope doing, you know, skipping, and imagine if that character was, say, a Tyrannosaurus Rex with tiny little arms, it's very hard. You've got to think these things through, because you'll get to that point in the story, you think, I know I'm going to draw a picture of Tyrannosaurus Rex skipping. It's very difficult to draw, actually, when the character can't actually perform the roles that the story demands. So, but I think just, yeah, anything like that. I think that it was great fun growing up, and just, I just loved these. I've just kept them all my life, because I could still use these now for inspiration.
Yeah, of course. I was just thinking as well, while you were talking, you really make your books full of character, but they're funny as well. Did you like funny books when you were younger? Because actually it's something that's very difficult to do, I think. I would say that, wouldn't I? But, you know, I just think making books funny, and you're talking about the characters, so you're already trying to put personality into the characters and thinking about how it would look, whether it's going to make you laugh or not.
I absolutely love comedy. And so I love bringing humor into my books, into the stories I write, and just the way I illustrate characters, even if they're characters for other authors. The idea that something that I've written or I've made or I've drawn will actually make someone else laugh, it just makes me very happy, because I think there's nothing like having a good old laugh. It's really good for the soul.
So is that how you'd use your sketchbook? Would you use your sketchbooks for your stories, and you go back and you're always drawing, and then you go back and look at them and get ideas from them?
Yes, I think sketchbooks mostly for me is that, without going into too much detail, because we'll talk about it later, but I tend to do it, use sketchbooks just purely for pleasure, just to get drawings out. When you're an illustrator, illustrating for books, especially if they're for other authors, it's a job, you know, you've got to illustrate particular things. But the great thing about a sketchbook is that you can just literally put your pencil on the page and it'll just take you in all sorts of unexpected directions, because you'll start thinking, I know I'm going to draw an elephant, and it starts, you know, do the first line, you think, oh, it's gone a bit wrong, I'll turn it into a polar bear, and then so what's a polar bear wearing a hat, you know? And but I love the way that it's just free form. That's what I mean. I find it really relaxing, and I just really enjoy it. But if I've sort of got a story idea in the back of my mind with a little character in, very often that character will keep cropping up again and again, or a scene, you know, mm-hmm. something happening will keep cropping up from one sketchbook to the next. I mean, I'm often over years. And eventually I just think there's a story in this character somewhere. There's something about it that I keep coming back to. And so many of my stories have started off in sketchbooks, without a doubt. Yeah, I love it. I love it for that reason.
And while you're sketching, and while you're on all those terrible tight deadlines and all the rest of it, a theme that has been running through this podcast a lot is how much of us enjoy having snacks and things to keep us going, which brings us nicely on, she says, shoehorning this in to our little section we're calling Snack Chat.
Snack Chat.
Now, Adam, we're very excited about your snack of choice here, particularly Mark. They are actually one of his favourite snacks as well. So would you like to tell us a little bit about what keeps you going?
My snack of choice, and I'd really like to you know, be a champion for this snack, is the Humble Digestive Biscuit. Now, I say Humble, it's got to be a McVitie's, naturally, because they're the originals.
I mean, we're throwing there, like, other digestives are available.
Other digestives are available, but Adam prefers the McVitie. That's all I'm saying. But I was racking my brains when I was coming on the podcast. I thought, well, I've got to think of my favourite snack. And, you know, there's so many amazing things out there. But I thought, you know, at the end of the day, it's got to be the Humble digestive. And I mean,
it's very homely, isn't it?
I mean, you can have your head turned by a party ring or a chocolate hobnob.
That sounds wrong somehow.
But at the end of the day, you know you're coming home to a nice digestive.
It's quite a grown-up biscuit, I would say. It's like if you were a kid and you were faced between, you had a plate of biscuits, I don't know whether a digestive would be your biscuit of choice, first of all.
That's true.
It really goes with a cup of tea. Do you have a sort of tea dunking?
Well, they've got a good consistency for a dunk, you know, because you don't want them to disintegrate too quickly. But you see, I was thinking about this because I was sort of trying to examine why I would choose a digestive biscuit, because it's quite sort of ordinary in its way. I think it was for two reasons. Firstly, growing up in Switzerland back in the dawn of time when I was little.
You're not that old. Come on.
Back then, it was, can you remember when you used to travel abroad and you'd have, there'd be things to eat and drink abroad that you wouldn't get at home?
Oh,
you
just, yeah.
They wouldn't be in the shops. And these days, you know, with the global village such as it is, you can sort of find something similar pretty much everywhere you go, which I think is a great shame. Another one is paprika flavoured crisps. I used to have those all the time in Switzerland and in France and places like that. But now you can have them in England, which is lovely, but it's taken all the fun out of a paprika crisp for
me. I don't know. How much fun is there really in a paprika flavoured crisp?
Oh, I think you're underestimating the fun that can be had. But
clearly.
But I think there's something very English to me, because I was growing up abroad. We didn't have digestive biscuits, and they were a favourite of my granddad, who was this lovely man. My nan and granddad, my dad's mum, whenever we stayed at his house in Orpington in Kent, he'd come around every morning at breakfast time. It was his job to make tea. So he'd bring a tea with a cup and saucer, mind you, in no mugs. And and on the saucer would always be a digestive biscuit. So in the mornings, he'd come in to me and my brother, and we would be staying in the spare room, and with a cup and saucer of tea and a digestive. So I think there's something about that. So I feel very sentimental. I'm very sentimental as a person, and obviously about biscuits as well.
Well, it's also the fact that I've obviously doing extensive research here, i.e. looking on Wikipedia, it said digestive biscuits sometimes described as a sweet meal biscuit, which doesn't sound quite so nice, does it? It's a semi-sweet biscuit that originated in Scotland. Digestive was first developed in 1839 by two Scottish doctors to aid digestion. So there is a little bit of, you know,
they're good for you.
Well, who knew? I don't know if we're going to be telling that everywhere. Obviously, you know, we are not doctors. We're not saying that biscuits are particularly good for you. But they were first manufactured by McVitie's in 1892 with a secret recipe developed by Sir Alexander Grant. Their digestive is the best-selling biscuit in the UK. That's in 2009. The digestive was ranked, I like the fact they've got a ranking here, the fourth most popular biscuit for dunking into the tea among the British public, with the chocolate digestive coming in at number one. And you can kind of see why. I remember as a kid, though, if there were a plate of digestive biscuits, I would be immediately turning them over to see if they had chocolate on them.
That's true.
So you turn them over, and then the digestive was definitely better than a rich tea. Rich tea always felt like, what's the point?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think many would agree that it might be seen as a bit of a poor cousin to the digestive. The rich
Nobody's
tea.
Come on and picked a rich tea biscuit so far, have they?
Yeah. Well, no, any port in the storm, I'd say.
Well, thank you very much for sharing with us your snack of choice, which we definitely approve of. Thank you for that, Adam. And now, this is a section we would love to hear from you if you've got a tremendous tale to share.
Tremendous tales.
Wow, tremendous tale. I was racking my brains for this one as well. And I thought that I would, because I'm an illustrator primarily, I'm going to tell you a tremendous tale about drawing. And one of the things that I love most about my job, and I'm sure, I know for a fact this is the same with you, Liz, with your wonderful Tom Gates books.
Thanks, Adam.
So many
biscuits
of my friends
will be changing hands.
It's actually got quite annoying, the number of my friends' children who tell me how wonderful your books are. Because I'm like trying to press my books on them. They're going, oh no, Tom Gates changed my life. But yes, I was going to tell you my tremendous tale. So I love sharing drawing with kids, and I've always done that at events and festivals, much like yourself, Liz. It's a wonderful thing to do when you're doing live drawing. And I think for children to see an adult drawing, because I think a lot of children still assume that, you know, when you grow up, you stop drawing. So
well,
that
people
when
do don't they? That I always think that's a shame.
It's such a great shame, isn't it? It's such a shame. So I'm a real advocate for drawing and keeping drawing for all people. Anyway, I had this amazing gig. You mentioned it earlier on in the introduction. I was invited out to the Caribbean, to Antigua, to go and work in a holiday resort in the kids club initially. So I'd go out there and I'd do arts and crafts and read stories and things with the kids. And it was a wonderful, it had a really nice time, met some wonderful people out there. The kids were hilarious, as they always are. That went on for a few years. Then after a while, I was invited to go out. They said, can you do anything for adults, their adult guests? And I said, well, I love sketching, which we touched on earlier. And when I'm on holiday, I always take a sketchbook and I love just sitting and drawing. I find it very peaceful. And I've got all these memories from the holidays. So I started teaching adult guests how to sketch, and I'd make this little kit and gave it to them and just take them out and about around this beautiful island. And one of the guests there, well, many of the guests were much older. They were like in their 70s.
Yeah, it was because they're easy, Adam.
Yeah, exactly. And it was wonderful. It was really wonderful because I realised that it's as fulfilling and rewarding teaching someone in their 70s who's never drawn in their lives to draw. And there was this one old chap who was used to be a governor of a prison his whole life. He got into drawing and he absolutely loved it. And there was this other chap, this is the tremendous bit, there was a man called Kevin. He was an American man. And he did have a bit of a problem with his eyes, and he was there with his wife, and they both came along to my sketch club. And then afterwards, I was chatting to them. It turned out that Kevin was actually registered blind.
Wow.
Because he had this condition where he could only see through the peripheral of his eyes, so he couldn't see directly straight ahead. He could only see out of the corner of his eyes, but he still managed to do some sketching. And he said to me afterwards, Adam, this is a first for you. You've taught a registered blind man to sketch. So that was my tremendous moment. I was like, well, I'm going to take that as a claim to fame. So
can you remember what you were drawing? So that was very exciting. Remember what he was drawing?
We were drawing just a beautiful scene. So it was all like palm trees and beaches, and it was so beautiful out there. And it was wonderful. It was really wonderful. So it made me feel very happy. And I'm still in touch with some
of those
guests. Are
you? Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
I did have a question on here saying, what's the best thing about being an illustrator? But like you've touched on, actually producing work or doing things that you really enjoy doing is one thing which is really amazing. And then when you get the reaction from, you know, teaching somebody how to sketch or having parents or children really enjoying your stories, that's completely something else as well. It's just, it's incredible. And you sometimes forget about that side of it when you're actually making the book, because like you're saying, you get so involved in the deadlines and all the rest of it, that when you get that contact and when somebody tells you how much they've enjoyed your work, it's tremendous.
For me as well, doing the teaching, sketching and things, it genuinely is a two-way street. I mean, to see how a child or how an adult who's never drawn before, how they approach something and the marks they make on the page and how free it often is and how sort of uncluttered and unfettered by being taught how to do something. I find it incredibly inspiring, and I get an awful lot out of it. So it very much is a two-way thing. So, you know, when someone says, oh, I can't draw, I always think that's an awfully sad thing to hear, because it's like I say I can't sing and I really can't sing. It's awful.
Okay.
But it doesn't mean that I shouldn't sing, you know.
Well, maybe it does.
Maybe not in a crowded restaurant. But in the shower or, you know, around the house, especially when Zoe's not around. Because my wife Zoe is incredibly musical. Sometimes I've got a guitar and I play around with the guitar and I sing to myself sometimes. And Zoe will come in and start singing along, but just much louder and much better. And she just drowns me out. And I just sort of think, oh, what's the point?
And then Murray's in the corner going, no.
Murray's in the corner with his paws over his ears. I think everyone can draw. And it's I genuinely love seeing how people approach things when they haven't been sort of taught, you know, when it's really coming from their gut. And it's fantastic. And also with storytelling as well, you know, when you see kids at events and things and they say, let's make up a story. And there's no limit to their imaginations. I had to do a drawing once making up a character. And I was saying, what sort of hands shall we give this character? And this one boy just said, helicopters. And I was like, oh,
brilliant.
Okay. Right, he's got helicopter hands. Great. And things like that. And it's just like these things stick with you. And it reminds you that your imagination is limitless. And, you know, if you can bring some of that into your stories. So I love it. I find it very inspiring talking to people
Well, thank you for sharing that tremendous tale. That's absolutely, that's an excellent one. We love that story. So thank you very much for that. And now we're coming to the part where we would like you to play along, if you're listening at home or wherever you are, to our groundbreaking award-winning game. It's not, but there you go. Called What's That Sound? What's That Sound? So Mark has gone to a great deal of trouble to come up with a sound, which we're going to try and guess what it is. Do you want to play it then? Let's have a listen. I can hardly hear it. Ooh. Can you hear that?
I did hear that,
play
yes.
It again.
I like that.
Sounds like a sort of heartbeat of some kind, but I know it isn't. Adam, have you got any ideas then? What do you think that sound was?
Well, I think that is, I love that sort of resonant sort of sounds. You can sort of hear, is it cicada beetles? So it sounds like it's
You're being very specific.
Somewhere warm, somewhere lovely and warm. I love that sound because it means you're on holiday.
But, or not if you're at a sketch club.
Exactly.
Have a little listen then.
Yeah, that sounds like...
Is it the sort of... go on, Adam.
I think it's a bird or something tropical. I think it's either something... It sounds like something sort of booming. Could be anything from a toad to a bird to a some sort of ox.
Do you know, when we were starting, we were trying to work out... First of all, we thought in this game that maybe we should just draw with different things and try and get people to guess what we were drawing with. But then... Which we might still do.
I love that. Can you bring me back on when you bring that game in?
It might have been more relevant to an illustrator's podcast. Like, what are we drawing with? But actually, it was so difficult. It didn't work out. So can you give us a clue then?
Well, Adam already...
Oh, is he?
...mentioned three groups of animals, and one of which was bird. It is a bird.
Oh, okay.
Yay!
Do you want to hear it again?
Do I win some digestion?
So we know it's a bird.
Oh, it sort of almost sounds like an owl, but not quite. I can't put my finger. I think it's something more tropical than that.
And a lot bigger.
What?
It's a lot bigger.
A lot bigger.
It's a lot bigger. I thought you were actually telling us what it was. I was thinking, there's a bird called a...
Something a lot bigger. Can anyone out there have a guess at something? It's a lot bigger than an owl. What's a big bird? Ostrich.
Yes.
No.
Well done.
Oh my goodness.
It is an ostrich.
Did you get that right? I was going to say emu.
Fantastic. Yeah. Can I say that ostriches are one of my favourite awful jokes? I've got favourite awful jokes, and one of my favourite is that why has an ostrich got such a long neck? Because its head is so far from its body.
And that was it. Did you know as well, this is on another podcast, I had no idea about this. Talk about this. We're going off piste here. Did you know that on penguin bars, there's a joke on every one? You did?
Yeah.
Oh, you see, I didn't know that. I was like...
Under the yeah. label, under the little...
I didn't realise it was a thing. So...
Can you read that one out?
This one says, why don't penguins like rock music?
Hmm.
Because they only like soul. So there's just lots of sort of like penguin fishy watery type jokes in there,
themed jokes.
They're a bit like cracker
Fantastic.
Jokes really, if we're honest. Not very funny, not that good. So well done, Adam. You're one of the few guests who have actually guessed correctly our What's That Sound.
Excellent.
And maybe we might have to go back and try and introduce What's That Sound, as in what are we drawing with, if we can muster that. And so for our next section, we're calling it Tremendous Fail.
Tremendous Fail.
So it's been really interesting hearing from other people about the types of things that have gone wrong and how they've worked out okay on the end, or maybe they haven't. So would you like to share with us, Adam, a tremendous fail?
Right. Well, I had quite a few to choose from, but I'm going to do another drawing themed one. Years and years ago, I had been illustrating for quite a while, and I got this phone call from a friend of mine, and he had signed up to this sort of agency who provided sort of entertainment for big functions, you know, sort of like big dinners and weddings and things like that. And so they'd have everything from, you know, stuff for kids like, you know, face painting and what have you, but also for, you know, more kind of grown-up events like big work do's and things like that. And he'd got involved because he was another illustrator like me. And I got a call from him saying that the other man that he was going to be partnered with and go to this particular event had had to cry off sick. Would I like to go? And there was some money involved. So I said, yes, please. It was one of the early days of my career.
No shame there.
No. Anyway, so what it was at the Grosvenor House Hotel in London, which is this big, very swanky hotel. And it was a Christmas dinner event for a bank. And anyone working in the financial industries knows that these things are often very lavish. Anyway, so we went to this Grosvenor House Hotel and it was a black tie event, which meant I had to go out and get a tuxedo and a black tie. And of course, I had no money at all because I was an illustrator. I mean, what do you expect? And so I got this secondhand suit, which was too big for me. Big double-breasted navy blue dinner suit. It was very old and a bit sort of shiny at the elbows and stuff. And so I went along and my friend Noel and I went along to the Grosvenor House Hotel. And we got there and I wasn't sure what to expect. And I was there, as was Noel, as a caricaturist.
So you were drawing pictures of people?
I was drawing the guests, yeah. So there was like close-up magicians and fire eaters and jugglers and things like this going around. And it was very lavish. And I turned up there and Noel and I was there. You have to go in the back way. It was all sort of tradesman's entrance. And down these like sort of rather dim passages behind the scenes. Then we came out into this enormous ballroom where this dinner was happening. And there was like almost 1,000 guests at a sit-down dinner. It was huge. And we were up on these balconies that went around the edge of the dining hall and looking down. And at one point in the meal, there was a master of ceremonies came out in this scarlet coat. It was all very fancy. And he was announcing all the various entertainments that the guests could enjoy after their dinner. And at one point he said, and if anyone would like a caricature of themselves as a souvenir of the evening, there are two gentlemen. And he said, up in the balcony. And he pointed up to me and Noel, who were just like leaning with our elbows on this thing. Suddenly, 1,000 faces turned towards us. And we're just like, oh no, what have we let ourselves in for? Because particularly for me, because even now, I'm not very good at doing likenesses and not very good at caricatures. I find it the most stressful part of my work.
That's so not true, Adam, because you are absolutely amazing at them. Whether you were then or not is one true, but you're very good at doing that. So,
oh, well, thank you very much, Liz. You're very kind. But certainly, at least back then, I just thought it was a good story to tell, because even when, you know, there's something that you do, even for a job or if you're a child, and, you know, if you're really good at football, though, you might be not so good at taking penalties or doing corners or something. Do you know what I mean? There's always one aspect which you can improve upon. So this is why I thought I'd tell the story. So there was a lot of wine, as you might expect, at this Christmas party. And all these very giddy guests came pouring upstairs. And Noel, they were just queuing up. And Noel and I were frantically trying to draw pictures. And of course, they're all moving about and they're all in a very party frame of mind, shall we say.
Nicely put, Adam.
And then people kept saying, oh, look, can I join in? And I was sticking bits of paper together because more and more people wanted to be on the same drawing. Essentially, it was a total disaster. I don't think I did one drawing all night that looked remotely like the people that I was drawing. And I think it's in one evening, it's a personal best of, I think I've disappointed more people in a single night than I ever have done before or since. So that was a tremendous fail. But I look back at it with a great sense of humour, and it was a great experience. And bless them, all the guests there were very forgiving, largely due to the party aspect.
I'm sure that's not true.
The whole thing. But yeah, it was a really funny time. Ever since then, I'm still, if anyone says, oh, can you come along and do caricatures? I always remember that night. And I always sort of have to think very hard whether to say yes or not.
Yes.
Because I still find it quite, I don't know,
you never want to look up when somebody says, oh, can you draw a picture of me? It's that telltale look of disappointment when you show them the drawing and they realise it looks nothing like them.
There was a character right at the end who was absolutely stony-faced, definitely not in a party mood. And he sat there very still. And I remember he had quite a small head, big eyes and a very small mouth. And I drew this picture of him and it sort of looked like him. And I handed it to him and he looked down at the picture, paused, looked up at me, paused, and just got up and left. But at least he didn't, you know, he took his drawing with
him.
Well,
there you go. I remember when we used to have to do drawings at art college, we'd go into museums and stuff, and it was the kids that were on school trips and stuff would come and watch you. And I think people are really fascinated. They love watching people doing live drawing. Like, even if you're not that great at it, people still like watching the process of it. But this kid came over and was just watching me draw, and I made a couple of mistakes and had to rub things out, and they just sighed and looked at me and went, God, if you did that right in the first place, you wouldn't have to rub it out, would you? I was like, thanks. Or the worst thing would be you'd be sitting in front of a big dinosaur or something, and the kid would come over and go, what are you drawing? And you'd be looking at this, you going, I'm drawing that? Is it that bad? You can't recognize it. But anyway, it sounds like you learnt a lot from it, but I'm sure it wasn't as much of a failure as you thought it would be.
Well, ask the guests.
It's an excellent story anyway. Thank you so much for sharing that with us.
Thank you.
So you've already given us quite a few tips already on drawing, but whether you would be able to think of a few more, and also maybe about story writing as well, because I know that you write your own stories. And if there's a big difference between when you're illustrating other people's work and actually illustrating your own, but any tremendous tips that you'd be able to share with us would be really great.
Well, let me think. I would say when it comes to drawing and story writing, I would say, but particularly drawing, is keep a sketchbook. Keep it with you at all times and just draw and draw and draw and just really enjoy it. You know, don't feel that it's not for anyone else when it's in a sketchbook. It's just for your own sake. And you'll notice that when you look at sketchbooks that you did like last year and stuff, and you flick through, you'll probably find that the drawings you're doing this year are, you know, they're improving and they're getting better. And that's very encouraging. So I would say just do a lot of it. And it's the same with, you know, if you've got a notebook or a sketchbook, just, you know, put little story ideas down, funny things that you hear, or, you know, there might be a funny thing that you hear on the news, or that you might overhear on the bus, or a friend might tell you a funny joke or something like that. Just put all these little things that somehow, if they pique your interest, if they kind of, you sort of think, oh, that makes me laugh, or that makes me feel a bit sad, or that makes me feel excited in some way, then there's probably something there that you could probably develop into an idea for a story or for a funny character. I would say have a go at drawing from real life, because it's good to draw from, you know, copying other people. Like I was showing you those books that I used to copy from when I was little. That's a good way to learn some tricks of how to draw. But also just try drawing from real life, because that's what I like to do when I'm trying to come up with characters. I find that because I draw an awful lot, and I draw an awful lot of like people, say, or certain types of animals like bears. I like drawing bears a lot. They often end up looking sort of like the same person or like the same bear. So to try and shake it up, I live in Brighton, so it's a wonderful place to do this. I sit in a cafe somewhere and I just watch all these wonderful and weird people walking past.
I thought you were going to say bears then. I was thinking, there are no bears in Brighton, as far as I know. I wish.
But I draw people, and sometimes I use them. If I'm thinking of a character and I think, oh, I've got this grumpy uncle, I need a grumpy uncle character, and I can't really think of something original, I'll go and sit somewhere and I think to myself, who looks like a grumpy uncle? And I'll just watch people walking past. And it's a really great way of getting original ideas of how people dress and how people walk and their, you know, their body language. When you actually come into drawing, I would say think of things in basic shapes. So whether you're drawing a house and a garden and a tree, or, you know, an elephant or a dragon, whatever it might be, drawing your own mum, break it all down into simple shapes, and then think, you know, what shape are things, how big are they, and where are they positioned relative to the other shape? So you sort of think, well, if, you know, like I was saying about an ostrich earlier on, having a long neck because its head's far from its body, draw a little round circle for the head, and then draw a big circle for the body, and then join them up with a long neck. Just break it down into simple things, do things a step at a time.
That's a great way of making it funny as well. Like, just when you were describing that, I'm just imagining, actually, if the head was probably a little bit too small, or the body too big, the neck really
or the
long.
Neck too curly.
Yeah.
A curly neck. Yeah. For seeing around corners. Yeah. Anything like that. I think just breaking it down into smaller parts, because I think a lot of people get very overwhelmed by a blank page, and or they'll go in with too much detail. They do like a very detailed eye or something. And then it's very good to sketch the whole thing out really loosely and lightly first, and then sort of, then that'll give you confidence to start filling in, and you sort of think, oh, I know where the legs are going now, and I know where the nose is going, and then you can start filling these characters in.
I think that's an excellent tip, and don't worry about making mistakes as well. That's the other thing we always say.
Absolutely. Brilliant. Yeah. Mistakes are very important.
Fantastic. There are some excellent tips that I think our listeners are going to enjoy having a go at for sure. Thank you for that, Adam. That's great. That's your tremendous top tip. And also, we come to a section as well. We love hearing if you've got a tremendous book recommendation. Tremendous
book. Oh, tremendous book recommendation. Oh, you've thrown me now.
Well, you've already shown us those lovely books, but maybe if there's a book from your childhood or something that you've been reading recently, anything that you'd just like to tell somebody about.
There is a book that I really like, and I think children would enjoy this, but I think this is a book that I recommend to fellow illustrators as well. And it's by a guy called David Wiesner, who's an American illustrator, I think.
What was his name again? Sorry, David?
Wiesner.
Wiesner,
okay. W-E-I-S-N-E-R,
we'll put a link up to that on the wall.
I think, okay. Yeah. Do put a link up, just in case I've got the title or his name wrong. But I love the book. I love the book. Because I'm one of those people who always looks at the pictures first, even now, you know, in any situation. My house is full of books that I've not read. I still love having them all around me because I listen to a lot of books rather than...
It's nice still to have the object, though, isn't it? To have the...
Absolutely, yeah. Book. But this book I'm telling you about, it's called The Three Pigs. And the thing I love about it is that it starts off and you think it's the basic fairy tale of, Big Bad Wolf and the Three Little Pigs. And it starts off like that. And very quickly, it sort of goes a bit peculiar. I can't really describe
it. All the best books do.
It's sort of, in films, when they say, it breaks the fourth wall, which is usually when a character will look straight at the camera lens and talk to the audience. And it's called breaking the fourth wall. And David Wiesner in The Three Pigs has sort of done that, but in a picture book.
Wow.
So suddenly all these pigs they're sort of blown out of the story and into this sort of limbo land. And it's really funny because then they start sort of visiting other stories. And the way the art is done is wonderful. That's why I recommend it to one of my other illustrator friends.
I know, I'm desperate to go and have a look at it now. It sounds amazing.
It's really fascinating and it's wonderful. And the thing I love about it is it just shows you how much fun you can have by playing around with what a book is and what a story is and what illustrations in a book are. It's a book you have to really see yourself to really understand what I'm talking about, but I do love it. So on the spur, I didn't really have a book prepared for you,
but sorry.
That is one that I do tend to...
Well, that's an excellent choice. I mean, absolutely. I'm going to go and look that up right now. Thank you for
it's
that.
Very
sorry for putting you on the... spur of the moment.
Oh, no, I don't mind at all.
Well, like in other podcasts, sometimes it's difficult to shoehorn in what your latest project is or what your latest book. But on this podcast, we like to give you a shameless plug.
Shameless plug.
That was Mark, by the way.
That's brilliant. I like that, Mark. Well, I'm going to grab this and run with it.
Oh, show us, and you can lift up as well.
Can I show
you? Yeah, definitely. We'd love to see that.
I'll describe them as well. So, we were talking earlier on about the King Koo things.
Yes.
And King Koo books. And this is what they look like. Yay. So there's three books. This might be reversed. I'm not sure.
No,
my camera.
A Curse of the Mummy's Gold.
That's the second book, Mummy's Gold.
Oh, there's such...
And
the space thing.
From the space. So, and they're just like highly illustrated books. And I have had great fun making these. And so those have been my most recent
They're
sort
a really
of
nice size book. As well, aren't they?
They're lovely, yeah. They're really nice. They're sort of like, you can put them in your pocket.
Yeah.
That's King Koo. You can see her there on a sled with her pet wombat. And she's a genius, and she makes all these wonderful contraptions in her woods.
And those are the books that you wrote and illustrated.
Yes, I wrote and illustrated those. And I was really happy with them. I really enjoyed it. Had great fun making those because they were my first sort of books for older kids. So I learned an awful lot when I was making those as well about writing and about how to make books for, with longer stories in. And my latest picture book of my own that I wrote was this one. It's called The Day Finn Flooded the World.
Fabulous.
And that's about a boy who leaves a tap running overnight. And he floods the world in a single night because the basin overflows, and then the bathroom overflows, and then the house, and the village.
It's a big disaster.
And then some fish come looking for him.
As they do.
And you have to figure out, is he in trouble or is he not in trouble?
And
then, but my most recent book is that I illustrated is, of course, Space Boy. By David Walliams.
Which is absolutely everywhere at the moment. I mean, I'm not entirely sure when this is going out. But yeah, so this is a new collaboration that you've been doing with David Walliams.
Yes, a collaboration that started with Little Monsters, which is that one, and Marmalade. Yeah, so I did Little Monsters and Marmalade, which are picture books that David Walliams wrote. And they've been great fun because his books are full of humour as well, which, like I said, in my own work, we have that in common. So, and also big characters, and I love doing big characters that I mentioned before. And so his stories are full of big characters and comedy. It's been a really fun collaboration, and I'm really enjoying it. Space Boy is great fun because it's black and white illustrations, but there's loads of them.
Wow.
And yeah, it's a great story as well. Really enjoyed that.
So have you got any plans for doing any events and stuff? How did you enjoy doing the event side of it and going out and going into schools and talking about the books as well?
I do, yeah, I really do. Sometimes it gets a bit difficult because you get a bit busy, don't you? And you sort of like, you can't do everything you're invited to do. But I do really enjoy doing events. I think schools, for me, school events are always my favourite because you're always guaranteed to have kids there, which is really fun. You know, anything out of the ordinary in a school is wonderful, isn't it? So they always come out and they're all excited and you've got a whole room full of people. I get them to do a lot of shouting and drawing and stuff like that and all the sort of things that, you know, kids love to do.
So you've got
it's great fun.
You've got those three wonderful picture books there and the Space Boy and you've got the King Koo books. And also there's another book that you're working on at the moment, which you said is very hush, hush. So when can we expect the hush, hush book to be coming out then? Is this something that...
Well, it's hopefully it's a series and hopefully the first one's coming out in sort of spring, summer next year, which I'm really excited about it. It's another sort of young fiction series, highly illustrated and lots of fun. But it's really at that stage. The interesting thing, I don't know how you feel about this, Liz, but when I'm coming up with ideas for stories, sometimes if I've written a text, say for a picture book, I like to say it out aloud a lot because picture books are often read out loud. So you read them out loud to your friends and then to make sure that they flow and everything feels right. And you'll recognize if there's a line or here or there that doesn't quite work. But when you've got an idea that's just bubbling away and it's about to become something, I don't actually like to talk about it to people because by talking about it, it sort of crystallizes it too much. And sometimes it gets fixed in one path where there's all these other paths available. Because often when you talk to with people, they'll say, oh, yeah, and then you could have this and this could happen and everything else. And you're like, no, don't say anything.
The worst thing that could happen is, oh, it's like that book.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And that's another thing as well, is because I've had situations when this is purely by coincidence, I have no doubt. But you know, sometimes you'll be chatting of like, you know, 1 year about, oh, yeah, well, I'm thinking of working on a story about such and such, about these two characters. And then another a book comes out and it's sort of like in the same ballpark. And you think, oh, no. And it's usually just because it's a zeitgeist thing. You know, there's all those sorts of things happening in the world. And but it is awful. It's such a sinking feeling because ideas are so precious, aren't they? When you've got an idea that you're excited about, they are so precious. So it's really soul-destroying when you sort of Google the title. So is that title available? You know, has it been used by someone else somewhere? And then it turns out that the title has been used and the story is exactly what you just thought was your own.
It's better that you find out then than when the book's just about to come
exactly.
out.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, but that's kind of why I don't like to talk too much until I've got a really good idea.
Well, we'll look forward to that. I'm sure it's going to be just as successful and amazing as your other books. But Adam, thank you so much. We've got so many brilliant tips, lots of book recommendations, lots of really good stories as well. We've both thoroughly enjoyed listening to it. And we have to admit, we know each other, we're friends, but I've learned things about you today that I didn't know. About your love of digestives for a start, who knew? And lots of other incredibly good tips. So all I can say is thank you so much, Adam. I'm going to put a link on the website as well. I really highly recommend that you go and check out all of Adam's books. They're absolutely amazing. Lots of amazing drawings of the picture books, all the story books, and all the books that are coming up as well. So all we can say is thank you, Adam, and let's give Adam a round of applause.
Oh, thank you. That's nice.
you've enjoyed this podcast, please do like and subscribe. And I've been told that it really helps other people to find it. And I would love as many children as possible to hear from these amazing creative people that I've talked to and to get inspired to pick up a pen, a pencil, get creative, make up their own stories, just like we've done. So thanks very much for listening. Bye.